The building of a home was never regarded by our people as a simple or easy matter. It takes a great architect, great architectural skill, to build an attractive physical house, building, structure. It takes even greater architectural skill of a different kind, of course, to build an attractive and enduring home. In our book of Proverbs, from which I read this morning, there is a considerable number of reflections and wise sayings about the home, by wisdom is a home built, and by understanding is it established. By knowledge are its rooms filled with all manner of precious and pleasant things. Evidently, it takes wisdom and understanding and knowledge to build a home and to fill its rooms with precious and pleasant things. The building of a home is an exquisite art. Now, some men and women are by nature gifted and artistic home builders. Other men and women acquire that art through years of experience, through the customary channels of trial and error, and they too come at long last to complete a fine home. Others, again, never learn the technique of home building. And so, to quote Job of the Bible, he leans against his house, but it does not stand. He lays hold of it, but it does not endure. Or changing the gender, and again quoting from the book of Proverbs, from that chapter which I read this morning, the wise woman knows how to build her home, but the foolish tears it down with her own hands. Home building requires skill, knowledge, wisdom. Now, why are homes altogether necessary for man? I do not mean physical houses, of course. Man needs shelter. Whether it be cave or palace, a basement or penthouse, man needs a roof over his head. But why does man need a home? Now, there were societies and social systems and philosophies in ancient times, and there are in modern times, who do not believe that men and women and children need individual homes, who advocate and who practice community living, dormitory existence for adults, and state institutions for the care and the rearing of children. Plato in ancient times advocated just such a system. And Russian communism is theoretically at least, and in some areas practically, committed to it to this day. Why does a man need a home? The value of a home is that men and women and children need a little private world of their own, where they themselves and no others are the principals, the primary centers of interest, and the source of attention and of authority. The home is the little world in which every man, woman, or child can find an important status, a value which the great world outside frequently fails to give them. In his home, says a Hebrew proverb, which is quoted in the Talmud, in his home, even a humble weaver is a king. A home and a family are small enough to give the individual in it a sense of indispensability and therefore of spiritual security, which are so vital to the development of the personality of every human being. If a man does not feel important, he is defeated from the very start. In other words, the importance of a home is that it is for the personality of man a stronghold. A shelter. A poo stove from which he can move the world. And if what I say is true, then the home is even more indispensable in our age than it was ever in the past. In our age of growing collectivism, in this mass age, where the individual is coming to count for less and less, where the individual's independence of action, even in a democratic society, is so often restricted and constricted, deliberately or unconsciously, by the power of giant industrial organizations in which he is a small and almost insignificant cog, by vast labor organizations, and by the social demands of conformity on all sides. This machine age has the tendency of making the individual a number rather than a person. And it is literally true that the home remains for man his last refuge of independence and dignity. In the olden days, they spoke of a man's home as his castle, implying that his home gave man a certain legal immunity, a certain legal inviolability. But today, the home, in very truth, is the fortress and the stronghold of man's spiritual immunity, of man's ego, in the finest sense of the word, of his self. That is why men need homes. And the home, too, is the primary center for the cultivation of moral habits and the molding of character, not merely for children, For adults as well, adults are educated and must continue to be educated until the day of their death. It is easier, of course, to learn when one is young, but the process of learning, of self-development, of improvement of self must continue until the very end of our days. And it is the home where this cultivation of moral habits and the molding of character must take place primarily. It is there that man should receive the basic training in responsible citizenship, in the democratic way of life, and the obligations of a free cooperative society in which men make secure their rights by fulfilling their obligations. My good friends, social intelligence, the art of getting along with other people, is one of the principal characteristics of a mature person. A lot of people are bright. A lot of people are quick to learn. A lot of people are very smart. But unless they have a developed social intelligence, unless they've learned how to get along with people in an organized society in which every human being lives, they're not mature people. We are never quite wholesome or complete human beings until we have learned the essentials of human relationships. And it is in the home, in that closely knit, intimate, social unit, in its constant interplay and occasional conflicts, of personalities, of ambitions, of interests, of loyalties, its delicate balancing of rights and duties. It is in the home that we get our ultimate pattern of social behavior. Children leave their homes either equipped for life or crippled for life. The answer to the question, therefore, how to build a home, derives from the very functions which the home is to perform for the men and women who set out to build one. These young men and women must bring to the task of home building, in the first place, a frank acknowledgement and realization that they have much to learn about home building. And they must possess a humility prerequisite for learning. And finally, a full realization that the success of home building depends, in the last analysis, upon themselves. Society can do much, of course, to protect the home. In the first place, society can train young people for the career of husband and wife, father and mother, as deliberately, as consciously, as society trains them for business or for other professions. This is the supreme profession of human life. It is generally assumed that young people, upon reaching a certain age, are ready for married life. Well, physiologically, they are ready. But much more is needed in preparation for marriage and home building. Knowledge of the problems involved in parenthood, in home management, in economic planning, in the proper adjustment to situations, ignorance and lack of preparedness very often lead to disastrous consequences and disillusionments and much avoidable unhappiness. And society may protect the home, and should protect the home, by removing from it those tensions and strains which are caused by poverty, by prolonged unemployment, by factors over which the individual has no control. A long economic harassment, strain, frustration caused by want, worry, by insufficient income to maintain a tolerable standard of living. These factors are not conducive to a happy and enduring home. But it should always be borne in mind that the absence of poverty and the presence of wealth in themselves have never been known to ensure a successful marriage or to maintain a happy home. When all is said and done, my dear friends, it is the personal equation which remains the one determining factor in the situation. The school may educate, the church may instruct, society may protect, but the individual man and woman, in the last analysis, must assume and bear the major, almost the entire responsibility of the enterprise of building and maintaining their home. And without the exercise, unflagging and constant, of their utmost gifts of heart and mind, their utmost capacities, their utmost loyalties, their home will not withstand the pressures of the world, the tooth and razor of untoward circumstance. Therefore, in the building of a home, I should begin with a great design and a great designer. I should begin with God. The Bible puts it quite simply. Im Adonai lo yivne bayit, if it is not God who builds the house, shav amlu bonav bo. Those who build it labor in vain. This was the conviction of a people, my dear friends, that has had a genius for home life. And it was not merely a bit of religious formalism or ritualism that the Jewish home had affixed to its doorpost a mezuzah. What was the purpose of affixing this little container, this mezuzah, upon the doorpost of a home? Not for ostentatious purposes, and not merely to advertise that this home was a Jewish home. The purpose of it was to designate that this is a house which God had built. He was the designer of this house, the architect. In this mezuzah, There was contained not only the classic declaration of our faith, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, but there are other verses written in that, on that little parchment from the book of Deuteronomy. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy might. And these words which I command thee shall be upon your hearts always. Here is a home dedicated to God and to the things of God. The designer of the home is God. Marriage and family are divine institutions. And the great design of the home was to be a full, free, and blessed life under God. Now, if you start out with such a design and such a designer, then it will matter little whether your home will be large or small, built out of stone or brick or wood, or in the choicest neighborhood or not. There will be peace in it, peace in your dwelling. The foundations will be secure, and life's deepest satisfactions will be found in it. Much may come later, years later, after your home is built, and however modestly it is built. Many of your hopes for prosperity may be fulfilled. Many of them may not be fulfilled. But the great design will remain untarnished, undiminished. And there will be light in your dwelling. Therefore, much more important when you plan a house, a home, to consider the design in a spiritual sense. Then the color scheme or the carpets on the floor or the furniture, the physical furniture in the home. It's much more important to determine at the outset what the spiritual scheme, what the spiritual tone of the home will be. If men and women start out with this great design of a full, free, and blessed life under God within the shelter of their home, then they will at once begin to practice ways of eager and voluntary cooperation to achieve that end, which will make for mutual completion and mutual freedom, and which in turn will lead to contentment, pride, happiness. People frequently overlook the fact that the home is the supreme cooperative venture in our society. It is amazing how this self-evident fact is frequently overlooked, and how often conscious or unconscious exploitation and competitive selfishness go under the guise of family life. The domineering, headstrong, bossy, would-be head of the family. The wife who humiliates and drains her husband's strength and drives him to distraction in order to provide her with what she thinks she needs in order to keep up with the Joneses. Children who exploit their parents in a most shameful manner, demanding as a matter of right things which parents can give only at the cost of great and needless sacrifice. And children who in return give nothing. All these, and there are all grades and varieties of them, society. All these do not understand the obligations of cooperative living. They are cheats and parasites and exploiters. And sometimes the home, their home, survives in spite of them. But what a home, and what meanness and tragedy the roof of that house covers. To live in freedom in a family is to share in freedom, and eagerly. Freedom has meaning only within the framework of responsibility, within an arrangement of give and take, of just sharing of privileges and sacrifices. A home must have its moral constitution quite as much as a state. And the first article in that constitution is that all members of a home possess certain unalienable rights. You might use the same words of our Declaration of Independence, right to life and to liberty and to the pursuit of happiness. That belongs to each and every member of the family. A successful home is built upon mutual respect for those who dwell therein. Husband and wife and children have common interests, of course, but they also have separate interests. Each has an island within, a private world. And family unity and family love and devotion do not call for the subjection or absorption of all personalities within the home into one personality. Each member of the home should be encouraged to preserve and to develop his or her interest and to fulfill themselves. The child in the home should be guided and advised, and parents should never abdicate the duty of guidance and advice and instruction and help to the child in every way that they seem best. But the child should never be coerced in the choice of his life's major interests and his career. The child is entitled to a freedom of self-realization later on in life. Mother has interests beyond motherhood, social interests, civic interests, artistic interests. She should be free to cultivate them quite as much for her own sake as for the sake of enriching the life of the family. And it will save her from the empty years when her children are grown and no longer require her constant care. Father was an individual before he was married. Why should he be completely absorbed in the role of parent and provider? He owes it to himself as well as to his family to keep on growing intellectually, spiritually, not to surrender all the fine dreams of his youth, A successful home is built upon mutual respect for the personality of each one within the home. What builds a home? Not wealth. I have seen, and you have seen, many wealthy homes wrecked. Not costly appointments. I've seen many beautiful homes decorated by the finest, the most expensive decorators, filled with art treasures, homes in which meanness, hatred, unhappiness reigned. Homes are not built by servants or by governesses. Homes are built by character, by social intelligence. Homes are built by a boundless love which protects but does not consume. Homes are built by men and women who are willing to share burdens and disappointments, who know the mandates of cooperation, who have mutual respect for each other. These are the qualities which build homes. Unfortunately, there are not enough of these qualities in society today if we look around and see how many homes are broken, wrecked, with the resultant tragic delinquencies in children. Somehow these simple, time-tested, homespun virtues and wisdom have been forgotten by many in our day. But these are the foundations upon which to build a home. And later on, as the years move on, memories will enter the home. And fill it with a beauty, consecration, and its walls will be covered by the patina of age and grace and loveliness. If men start out with a great design worthy of them and invite the great designer to plan the spiritual outlines of their homes, their homes will withstand the winds and the storms of adversity, and they will find in it security and dignity and peace and happiness.